Well, that was fun, wasn't it? The Boston Celtics with a big 122-121 win. Jason Tatum with the game winner, and I'm going to talk about it right here on this Thursday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Oh yeah, baby. The season is back. The Celtics are officially back, and the Celtics are officially undefeated with a 122-121 win over the Milwaukee Bucks, where Jason Tatum banked home a miracle three to put the Celtics up two, and then the referees gave Giannis a foul and two free throws with half a second left, and he missed the second one that would have tied the game. I'm John Corrales. I cover the Boston Celtics, and I host this Locked On Celtics podcast. I was there. I saw with my own two eyes inside the garden, and this whole podcast is going to follow my regular post-game podcast format, which is segment one, the good, segment two, the bad, and segment three, a few other notes. If you're a new listener, get ready for Monday through Friday podcasts, except for this week. This is the Christmas Eve podcast. No Christmas Day podcast necessarily until after the Christmas Day game, where I'll come home and I will record one Friday night, a post-game podcast for you guys there. So still five podcasts this week. It's just going to be a little bit of a delay because of the holiday. So, oh, by the way, regular listeners, shouts to you. Love you. Thank you for sticking by me through all of this crazy turmoil of this past 2020. 2020 is almost done. Flush that year down the toilet. But thank you for sticking by me and subscribing and all of that stuff. Let's dive into this. Good stuff happening in segment one, starting with the obvious. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. 63 combined points. They are the first Celtics teammates to each score 30-plus points in a season opener. That's nice. They are also the second youngest duo in NBA history, according to Elias Sports Bureau, to each score 30 or more in a season opener. Also fun, they did it in the clutch. This is the big part. 39 of 50, of Boston's 58 second half points were scored by Tatum and Brown. 17 of Boston's 21 fourth quarter points were scored by Tatum and Brown. They combined to carry the Celtics. When things looked their worst, those guys stepped up. And you just have to be impressed, even though Jason Tatum started slow. He came on in the second half. He finished with 12 for 28 shooting, 6 of 13 from 3, 13 three-point attempts for 30 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, couple turnovers and a block. Jaylen Brown, 13 for 24. What a night. 13 for 24 is awesome. 3 of 8 from 3, a perfect 4 for 4 from the line, including a technical foul that he shot. An interesting thing that he shot the technical foul. Good for him. 33 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Everybody's talking about the Tatum shot. Jaylen Brown had offensively the overall game, and he had a pretty good defensive game too. I thought Jaylen Brown was the best player on the floor for the Boston Celtics. I mean, aside from Shimmy Ogilvy, of course, which I'll talk about in a minute. But no, JB was awesome. Awesome. You know, the passing, some of the passes that he made were really nice. But really being able to expand his offense and hit a bunch of mid-range shots, which, look, against Milwaukee, you're just going to have to do that. If you're going to beat Milwaukee, you're going to have to hit some of those mid-range shots, and you're going to have to bury a bunch of your threes, which the Celtics did, 45% of their threes, 18 for 40, and Jaylen Brown lived in that mid-range. Looked like Kawhi out there taking those middle-of-the-lane fadeaway jumpers. That's exactly what Kawhi did a couple nights ago against the Lakers. But those shots were fantastic. Take what's there, bury them at a high rate, and those are fine. So offensively, just beautiful. On top of that all, I thought Jaylen Brown's play with a couple minutes left to go, he's on the right side of the floor, and he's running a pick and roll with Daniel Tice. He's being guarded. Jaylen Brown gets the ball guarded by Drew Holiday. In the pick and roll, Giannis Antetokounmpo switches onto him. And Brown changes directions, gives Giannis like a little fake, just a little hesitation, a little something, that little shoulder thing that makes him bite. And all of a sudden, he's by. Jaylen Brown just busts right past Giannis. And Holiday tries to recover. Giannis tries to recover. Jaylen has this crafty finish. I'm telling you, I tweeted it out. I'll say it again here. That might be his most impressive move as a Celtic. And maybe he's had some flashier moves. I think there was a move in San Antonio where he just kind of went between, I think it was San Antonio, where he went between the legs last season. It was just kind of like on the fly and really interesting. This is growth. Jaylen Brown, as the pick and roll ball handler, got plenty of reps as the pick and roll ball handler. I have to go through and pour through the stats and drill down a little bit more about how he was the pick and roll ball handler and how he fared in that. But the eye test tells me he fared pretty well, which frankly, I don't think anybody really expected a whole lot of Jaylen Brown ball handling in the pick and roll success this year. But as he said afterwards, I asked him about it. He said, new year, new responsibility. And he's taking that on. And it's very, very impressive. That play that I'm talking about with about 2 minutes to go was super, super impressive. And Jaylen has been consistently just surprising with how much he expands his game. He's worked really hard, and I think he's been great in the catch and shoot kind of role, which he was great in last year, and he'll still be great in when Kemba's back. Jaylen Brown's still going to have to do a lot of that stuff. But the ability to work as a pick and roll ball handler, because his ball handling had been his weakest point for the first few years of his career. Now he's getting it to a point where he's making these moves. I'm very, very impressed. Obviously, Tatum's game winner was, I don't even want to, it was good. It was good. I don't think that play was good. So I don't understand why that happened the way it did. Again, I have to go back and watch it again, but him getting the ball against Middleton, who's 6'7" and a good defender, but then getting a pick and getting the switch onto Giannis, who's almost 7 feet and the defensive player of the year, and then rising up, having to rise up against Giannis, take a three, not even driving. You're only down one. For that to go in, I mean, he was rewarded. He was definitely rewarded. So, it's not the best shot in the world, but it went in. I'll take it. Move on. other good things that happened in this game before I move on to the second segment. Shout out to Jeff Teague, 4-4 from three, carried the Celtics bench. Maybe, and I wrote this on Red's Army, that the Tatum shot was the second most miraculous thing to happen in this game. The most miraculous was the Celtics bench outscoring the Milwaukee bench by 22. And that's because Jeff Teague had 19 on 7 of 15 shooting, a perfect 4-4 from 3. I asked him about his three-point shooting, that he was perfect from from 3, and he said, thanks for jinxing me after the game. You're welcome, Jeff. If I believed in jinx, I'd apologize. But Teague, and I've been very critical of Teague, he is, this game definitely shut me up. This was a great game. In the second quarter, he was very essential to the Celtics, hanging around, coming back, keeping this game close, and allowing the Celtics and Tatum and Brown to kind of get back into things in the second half. I mean, Teague was very, very important. Marcus Smart, this is the type of Marcus Smart game. Like, this is a very underrated game, but Marcus Smart did so many important things. 7 assists, which was a team high. Only 3 shots, only 2 three-pointers, nothing forced offensively. That's a beautiful performance from Marcus Smart. In, you know, he gave the game what it needed, and he drew 3 charges on Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis had 5 personal fouls. The first 4 of them were offensive fouls. The first 3 of those were drawn by Marcus Smart. This is a perfect Marcus Smart game in this situation. Daniel Theis had a quietly nice game. When did Daniel Theis start driving and attacking closeouts? Theis dribble drives were a thing in this game, and it was pretty good. I liked what I saw from Daniel Theis at the 4. And really, I guess more Tristan Thompson was at the 4 in the double big lineup. They started Thompson alongside Daniel Theis. I asked Brad Stevens if it was because Milwaukee was big, and he said, no, basically it was because we'd sucked defensively, and I wanted to start good defenders. So there we are. I'll talk more about the double bigs. Before I go in this segment, got to shout out the second quarter Semi Ojeleye, who dropped a transition Euro step and one, and then like a minute later, got the ball in the middle of the lane and dropped a beauty of a dump-off pass. I think it was to Tristan Thompson for a layup. And I think he drew a foul on that too. It was the most dynamic 2 minutes of Semi Ojeleye's NBA career. That was unbelievable. I've never seen that from Semi Ojeleye. I would not have bet on that. And I'm sure if I wanted to, betonline.ag would have had me covered. The NFL regular season is finishing up. NBA is back. There are plenty of places to place some bets. College football, it heads into their bowl season. So go to betonline.ag. It's the one place that has you covered. It's the one place that we trust here in the Locked On Podcast Network. Sign up for free right now at betonline.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON. You're going to get a 50% welcome bonus. Okay, go on there. There are prop bets. If you're watching a game, you want to lay some money down on the game itself, over-unders, things that are happening during the game, things that are going to happen quarter by quarter, you can do it all on betonline.ag. There's no reason to sit on the sidelines anymore. You can get into the action right now. But don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify. Before the break, I talked about betonline.ag. You're going to want some advice to maybe give yourself an edge when you're laying some money down. The holidays are all about giving, so I'm going to give you the hot tip that could earn you some extra cash. The new Locked On Bets podcast. It's hosted by Lee Sterling of ParamountSports.com. Lee is red hot to start the season, and he shares a lock of the day on every episode. So subscribe to Locked On Bets today, wherever you get your podcasts. Bad things happened in this game, for sure, and I'm going to talk about them now in the second segment, because that's what I do in these post-game podcasts. And the first bad thing that we need to talk about is the Celtics' transition defense. In that first half, woof, that was bad. The Bucks got leak out after leak out after leak out. I got to look and see why a lot of those happened, but usually that's a function of someone up top either being out of position. The Celtics only turned the ball over 7 times. That's one of the good things. So it wasn't a ton of turnovers. It was just missed shots and guys running out and somebody just missed an assignment. Guys getting caught too deep. And that if the Celtics, Brad Stevens said after the game, if the Celtics had turned the ball over more than 7 times, then they would have given up like 150 points instead of 121. Celtics defense, not particularly great in this one. When you look at the final numbers, it's not good. 121 points is a lot of points to be giving up. 51.1% shooting is not ideal. Neither is 40% shooting from 3 and 18 free throws. I mean, the Celtics' biggest difference in this game was they forced 16 turnovers and converted them into 19 points, and the Celtics turned the ball over 7 times, and that turned into 8 points. So an 11-point difference there, and Jeff Teague's 19 points off the bench are really what gave the Celtics the opportunity to get that Jason Tatum banked-in 3-point miracle. That performance from Jaylen Brown wouldn't have mattered. Tatum's overall performance wouldn't have mattered if the Celtics didn't protect the ball, because their defense was not great. Now, of course, this is the Milwaukee Bucks. And Giannis and Middleton and Holiday and some of the shooting that they have around them, Lopez, that's a team that's going to score a lot of points no matter what. So I don't want to sit there and say like they gave up 121 to the Cleveland Cavaliers or something. That's certainly, you've got to take that into account. The Milwaukee Bucks are a really good team. And you play this game 10 times, it goes a different way a lot of those times, you know. But that defense certainly has to improve. After the game, Brad Stevens said that we were more forceful and purposeful on offense, and that's basically the only thing that was better than the preseason. He doesn't like the defense. He doesn't like the way that went. Now, I did see a lot of good defensive possessions. I thought the Celtics had some really good defensive runs at Giannis. Now, of course, he finished shooting 50% and 35 points. 35 points, 13 rebounds, 2 assists, and 50% shooting is not the line that you want to say, oh, the Celtics did a good job on Giannis. He did have 7 turnovers. Okay, 4 of those were offensive fouls. So the Celtics, I don't want to say that they contained him. I don't want to say that they limited him, but there was a run there in the fourth quarter where Giannis went crazy and had like 8 straight points or something. And that kind of pads the stats a little bit. I thought there were some really good defensive possessions against Giannis. You're not going to stop him, but he could have had another 10, 12 points in this game. And this went from a really good statistical game to, it could have gone to something monstrous. So, but that said, the Celtics defense was not good in general. The rookies, they look like rookies. And the one thing I want to bring up, because I did a whole segment on Aaron Nesmith And I said, how bad does this guy have to be to not get any minutes? And well, he didn't get any minutes. So I guess the answer is pretty damn bad, which I don't want to overreact to one game. I don't know why he's not getting the minutes right now. I'll find an opportunity to ask Brad Stevens about this. They are not holding media availabilities on Thursday, so the next chance to talk to Brad will be before the game on Friday. Merry Christmas, Brad. Why aren't you playing Aaron Nesmith? That's how that's going to go. But I guess my guess is that he's not picking up on some of the defensive principles. Now, he's 6'6". He has a 6'10 wingspan. He's a big forward that theoretically can shoot. That's exactly the archetype of the player the Celtics need. I don't believe that the Celtics are going to hold this guy back if he has proven somehow, somewhere in practice, that he can indeed perform. The Celtics have let him speak to the media a couple of times, so he's going to be an active participant in the Celtics scheme somewhere, I'd like to think. So right now, a DNP from from Aaron Nesmith is not great. Okay. But without having seen anything, I don't know why. Guys seem to say good things about him, but there's something about him that's not translating. Is Brad Stevens going to tell us that? Is he going to give us the honest answer? I don't know. But and Brad Stevens seems to be a little bit more forthcoming this season and a little bit more forward about some of the problems. Peyton Pritchard did play 13 minutes. He looked like a rookie for most of those minutes. He did hit a three. There was one point where Jason Tatum called him over. There was a pick and roll with Pritchard as the pick setter. And Tatum drove left and drew three people. And Pritchard was wide open. I got to go look back and find that. It was early in the game. I mean, there was literally no one within 20 feet of the guy. And Tatum didn't give it up. But I don't know. I guess he's just not going to pass to the rookie. Pritchard was okay. He was okay. You know, I don't think he did anything that's going to warrant a ton of, let you say, oh, well, you got to play this guy. Some good effort. He had one possession where he forced the shot. He just kind of like got stuck and he dribbled his way into a fadeaway jumper. That can't happen much. But the rookies, you know, Pritchard looked like a rookie. Aaron Nesmith looked like a cardboard cutout on the bench. That's what am I going to say? And the last thing I noticed is the Milwaukee Bucks. And again, they're big. They're going to be a good rebounding team. The 11 offensive rebounds was a little much. The Celtics need to make sure they're clearing. This is part of the defense that I was talking about earlier. They got to make sure that they're clearing these misses because that hurt them. If the Celtics had cleared away five of those offensive rebounds, then that would have made this game a lot more comfortable. A few other things to talk about here, including some interesting things that I saw in the offense and something I just love with the game presentation. That is coming up next on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Locked On Women's Basketball is the only daily podcast covering the world of women's hoops. Join an all-star cast of hosts each day of the week for a comprehensive look at the worlds of the WNBA, women's college basketball, and international competition that you simply won't find anywhere else. Subscribe to Locked On Women's Basketball on your favorite podcast provider. Now, a few other things here before I wrap up the show. I saw some interesting things in the Celtics offense that I have to go back and look. But I saw a lot of movement, side to side, cross screening type of things, Iverson cuts, which are across the free throw line. These types of side to side free throw line area actions that I didn't see or notice a lot of last year. And it feels like the Celtics are doing a lot to get guys the ball on the move, which is something I've talked about a few times recently on this podcast. It feels like that there's a lot of cutting across the free throw line, catching, and then cross screening elbow to elbow, and a guy coming off of that for a three-pointer or an attack off the dribble. And then that opens a drive and kick or some other potential opportunities on the weak side. I got to go back and look at this, but we're looking at this Celtics offense evolving a little bit to match the skills of this team, of who the personnel is on the Celtics. And it's an interesting wrinkle, and it I think a lot of the things that we've been talking about over the past year or two, they're coming to fruition now. So shot selection, which I've talked about a couple times here this week, and Brad Stevens and the team have addressed the need for more efficiency. Now, the Celtics only took 11 free throws. They did hit 8, but that has to change. That has to move up. That has to get up above 15. That has to get up closer to 20 if they can get it. A more efficient offense, attacking, getting to the rim, getting layups. That's where the efficiency kicks in. The Celtics took 101 shots, which is awesome. I love it. 100 shots. Now, they gave up 90 shots to the Milwaukee Bucks. Not great, but taking 100 shots, getting yourself more opportunities to score is awesome. Those side-to-side actions, the offense being tailored to get somebody moving from one side to the other. Again, when you catch the ball on the move, you make your move. The defender is already moving. That's why jukes work in football. You're going in one direction. That defender is running in that direction. They don't know when you're going to stop. If you can just suddenly stop and cut on a dime, then that defender needs that half second, that split second reaction. That split second is what gets you past that defender. In any sport, when you're going in one direction, you can cut to the other side quickly. You're going to get by that person. So these actions side to side in the offense are things that I think are designed to get these guys on the move and get them against a moving defender so they can attack more. Now, it'll be interesting to see how the Celtics look at the film, process how they reacted there, because there's a lot of tendency for a guy to catch it, kind of amble a little bit, do a little hop, kind of assess the situation. And that's not what the goal is. If you're catching the ball on the move, if you're starting on the left elbow, getting a pick and catching, you want to turn and be decisive, which means peripheral vision, which means being able to feel that defender, being able to understand where your personnel is on the floor, who's on the floor with you, where are they, what that defender is going to react. So if you're Jason Tatum and you're catching that ball coming off a screen from left elbow to right elbow and you catch it, where are my shooters? How's the floor spaced? Where did that defender come off that pick? Did he go over or under? Do I feel him on my hip? Do I see him out of the corner of my eye? What space do I see? What lane do I have? All of those things have to happen super, super quick. And so seeing those actions is I think, an attempt to free all of that stuff up. And the more players get that, the more they operate in that system, the more they'll be able to feel things. It's again, going back to the football analogy, it's almost like a quarterback in the pocket feeling a defender around him. When I say feel, it's you can sense it. The peripheral vision, you can sense it. You know, at a certain time, 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, I better move because people are around me. I can feel them coming. Same thing with this. Catch that ball on the move. I can feel it. I know this guy went over the top. I can feel it. There's somebody there. So I better make my cut. I know I've got a shooter on the other side. I know I've got a shooter. This guy who just gave me the pass is going to relocate. I know I've got this defender. His defender's going this way. That defender's going to go that way. All of this stuff, quick calculus being performed in these players' heads. It all starts with this type of scheme. So I'm kind of very curious to see how this continues and how this evolves. Also, very curious to see how much Brad Stevens uses this two big lineup, because that was a little bit of a surprise. I thought we're going to use it sparingly. I asked Brad Stevens, is this because Milwaukee's tall? And he said, and he didn't say it this way, I wish he did. He said, no, it's because we suck defensively and I want us to start good defenders. We'll see if that continues against Brooklyn. I don't think Brooklyn has the same personnel. Like, if you put Daniel Tice out there against Brooklyn, like that I don't think is going to pan out exactly the same way. They're going to need a little bit more of a dynamic defender. So, you know, against Kevin Durant, and that's just going to be a different matchup. I don't know if they're going to go double big, but they might. They might. Also fun to see Grant Williams attacking closeouts. I talked about Daniel Tice attacking closeouts before. Grant Williams was attacking closeouts. I thought Grant Williams was interesting in this game. Now, he usually is a plus-minus monster, and I'm not going to put too much stock in his minus 19. Usually, at the end of a single game, he finds his way into positive plus-minus. I thought he had some pretty good moments against Giannis, and I thought that he was, you know, he took threes mostly confidently. He hit one. Took him a long time to hit one last season. So coming out and hitting one right away, okay. He drove. He attacked. He had an assist. So interesting. Just an interesting expansion of Grant Williams' offense. I don't know if that's what Brad Stevens is looking for, but it was interesting to watch. And finally, I'm going to finish with something that I loved, 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 loved. The banners in the background. The banners down at each end. Now, they were in place for Tommy. And if you go to the Celtics Twitter, they kind of listed why those particular banners were down. I hope that they continue this. Because also, if you look at the Celtics Twitter, some of the photos from the end lines that were taken were unbelievable. I mean, just the picture of Tatum and Brown kind of doing that jump, chest bump with the banners in the background after that three-pointer. That was just, oh man, that's just an awesome photo. So I hope they continue this, because you have this opportunity. You want to do a backdrop? You're the Celtics? You should do this backdrop. Why not? You've got the banners? Do it. And I see a lot of people on Twitter saying, oh, only one championship in 34 years. Okay. Yeah. I gotcha. That's, you know, I know that the most franchises don't have two potential cornerstones die in the span of like less than 10 years. But, you know, hey, say what you got to say. The Celtics have the banners. You want to flaunt them? Flaunt them. Doesn't matter when they happened. You got them? Flaunt them. There are a lot of teams that would love to have one championship in 34 years, because they don't. And that's not some crazy like, ooh, Celtics flex. You win a banner. When you win banners, you win the right to kind of use that however you want to use that. Like, we bust the Lakers' balls for saying 17 when it used to be, 12. But, hey, you got 17 banners up there that say Lakers on them. You flaunt them if you want. That's whatever. Like, the Bulls don't play up their championship history? Why not? If you got the banners, use them. I thought the way they used them in this game just provided for this awesome backdrop, and I think it was great. I think the tributes to Tommy were great. I think the patch on their jersey, that's not just a black patch that says Tommy, the shooting shirts that they have that say Tommy on them with his number 15. They handed out pins with the number 15. I loved it all. And the one thing that the Celtics are doing is they're going to do another tribute to Tommy when fans are in the building, which is nice. They did a couple of videos in this one. They held a moment of silence to do something again for the fans, because the fans are going to want to do something for Tommy. I think that's a nice touch as well. All right, next podcast is coming up after the Brooklyn Nets game, so nothing before then. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. If you're new, welcome aboard. I hope you've enjoyed it enough to subscribe. You regular listeners, you know what I love from you all. The 5-star rating, the good written review, and sharing. Of course, share the podcast with everybody. Tell them all that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.